Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food and drink lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We do more varieties and flavors of cheese than anywhere else on Earth. By pushing the boundaries of what cheese can and should be, find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you sun in the air.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson. Souther.
Hey buddy, just the two of us today. What's going on?
Well, we are officially living in the future. The future is now. The future, Souther, is here. I don't know if you've heard about this, but as of, I think, last week, White Claw introduced non-alcoholic White Claw. You can now walk into a convenience store, go to the beer section, and buy soft, hard seltzer. It is... History is finally complete. We did it. We've accomplished what we as a species have been building towards through millions of years of evolution. It's here.
I think the listener is going to need just a little bit more clarification here. Please tell me what you're saying is that a company that created seltzer that has booze in it has now created seltzer that has no booze in it?
Yes, that's correct. So if you've ever drank a White Claw and thought to yourself, oh my God, this is so refreshing, but I really wish there was no alcohol in this. If only there were some way to drink this and then be able to operate heavy machinery or testify in court. Well, now you can.
So White Claw has created La Croix.
Is this a thing that existed already?
Yeah.
Non-alcoholic flavored seltzers have existed, yes.
Since when? When did we as human beings come up with it? I'm going to have to check your math on that, Souther. This feels like too complex of an innovation that previous civilizations wouldn't have been able to get there.
Greg, I think what we have here is what used to be termed jumping the shark. And I realize that's probably too old a reference for people to understand. But there was a point when, on the show Happy Days, where the character Arthur Fonzarelli, a known cool guy in a leather jacket that rode motorcycles, was somehow on skis behind a boat, jumping over a tank of sharks. And that was in an effort to get more eyeballs on the show. And since then, that term jumping the shark has been applied to situations like this where someone does something sort of fantastical just to get looks. Do you think this is just White Claw trying to get some looks? Surely they don't need to go into the non-alcoholic seltzer, flavored seltzer space as a known alcoholic flavored seltzer creator.
You know, I would actually disagree.
Has NA cocktails jumped the shark is what I'm saying.
No, I don't. I mean, I think that, look, I don't think we've seen the bottom of this trend at all. And I think it's good. Like, I've been on record on the show of saying that, like, you know, especially as beverage professionals, I think we need to applaud anytime someone chooses to reach for something that doesn't have booze in it versus something that does, for whatever reasons that are personal to them.
Sure.
And I think that White Claw has realized that this is a trend and they have a very lucrative and valuable brand, and that there are people out there who will honestly, if they see this, buy it over a La Croix or a Canada Dry or whatever other seltzers there are out there. Like
Poland Springs.
Yes, exactly. This is
vintage.
I actually foresee this being a relatively profitable arm of their industry. And you can tune into the Speakeasy for updates.
Well, yeah. A quick Google search shows that a 12-pack of the White Claw flavored seltzer non-alcoholic beverages clocks in at $18 retail. So yeah, I think this is going to be ludicrously lucrative for them. Stumbling over my words.
Ludicrously lucrative. Because I think that's not an easy
ludicrously
one.
Lucrative. Because I think they have an audience who wants to drink their product. I don't know. You know how I feel about NA beverages in general. I think that it's weird that we moniker them. I think the moniker is alcohol, right? Everything is NA until you add alcohol. It's not taking alcohol away that makes something what it is. So this just seems very, I don't know, egregious. I don't know what word to attach to it. I'm gobsmacked by the whole situation. But it exists. Things exist.
I honestly, when you sent me this article, I checked the calendar to see if it was April 1st. I had a moment of doubt where I was like, have I just lost an entire month? Like, did I fall on the sidewalk and like my building just left me there for a month? Which they would. They might, you know, paint over me or, you know, give me a fresh coat of paint while I was lying there. And then I just woke up like Rip Van Winkle and got back into my apartment. I was like, oh, it's April Fool's Day and didn't notice. But no, it's real.
I didn't even consider April Fool's. But yeah, it does seem too far-fetched to be real. But it's real. To be honest, I think we should get a hold of some and give it a taste.
Oh, you say that like I didn't try. You say that like I haven't been trying really hard for the last 3 days to find some in Brooklyn. It's not here yet. I imagine it's still, it's trickling down into the major markets. We'll get it out.
Well, you know,
here.
It's very difficult to ship to all states if it's non-alcoholic. No, wait, no, it's totally easy to do that. we talk about that all the time. Well, let's talk about a little bit of alcohol to get off of that real quickly. You know, my fourth season of my online show, which we've now rebranded, we're now calling it Southern Hospitality. It was called The Bitter's Truth. So fourth season is called Southern Hospitality, hosted by Gush, which is a platform that hosts my show. We just announced yesterday that we're going to kick that show off later this month. So there's plenty of opportunities to subscribe if you want to be in my virtual show, an interactive sort of tutorial and class about cocktails and alcohol. And, you know, it's the fourth season we're going into. It's really been fun to do. And I don't know, I'd love to have some people join us and be in the class with me. I mean, you've come and done one with me.
I have, yeah. It's a fun thing to sit in on. We chit-chat. We make some drinks. I think usually for the cocktail classes I teach, I have like two or three. I think I had like five or six in the class I was doing with you. So we were having a good time. So
well, we're expert level.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Don't try this at home. This is, you know, do you put the little jackass warning before your thing? It's like,
with that little guitar riff.
Yeah, do not attempt.
Yeah, do not attempt at home, even though you're doing this from home. well, this is, you know, not my first foray into education. I used to be a teacher when I taught at the New England Culinary Institute some years ago. I taught all manner of things culinary, you know, butchery, ice carving, etc. So I'm no stranger to the world of education. And plus, I've been teaching cocktail classes for years. But today, who's in the studio with us, Greg?
Today in the studio with us, we have Tiffany Berrier live from Atlanta. Tiffany, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm giggling.
You are always giggling. I think that's one of your trademarks. But I was trying to set you up there, Greg, for our typically impossible segues. Tiffany, known as the drinking coach, is making quite a career out of being someone who teaches people how to make cocktails. And that's kind of why we wanted to get you on here and talk to you today. How are you from Atlanta?
I'm good. Today's a good day. It's a nice rainy day and feels good. We're working hard and having fun doing it.
You know, we had a guest on recently, Miss Frankie Marshall, and she does a lot of kind of what you do. And I want to create some parallels here in the beginning, at least to the fact that you currently don't have a work-a-day position. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you're a freelancer. You're out there kind of making it happen every day, and you're doing all manner of different things.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Freelance, independent, however you want to say it. I don't know. I'm the boss.
Well, I assume you're always the boss. You kind of made your name in Atlanta, heading up One Flew South, which is oddly an airport bar at Atlanta Hartsfield International Airport. But you headed that bar and Tales of the Cocktail made recognition of you as being the I can't remember exactly what the title was, but best airport bar in the world. Is that correct?
In the universe, that's me. Yeah, I did it. Yes, that's where it started. I'd bartended, of course, before that, but that's where it really kicked off, and that's where I grew up a bit. And, held it down for 7.5 years.
Yeah, pretty incredible. I've only been lucky enough to go to that bar one time, and sadly you weren't there when I went. but you made a name in a very that's an unusual situation. Talk to us a little bit about how running a, you know, world-class cocktail bar in an airport works, because I think that the bulk of us think that airport bars are, you know, just sort of doing the mechanics, right? Maintenance. It's maintenance phase, right? When I'm at the airport bar, I'm just going to have like a highball or a beer on tap, or I'm just moving through. I'm not trying to, you know, have a cocktail experience, but you spearheaded that. And now that's becoming more and more of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, that is what a kind of, it's a truck stop usually when you're traveling, and it's, if you have time, no one plans to be in the airport and have a highball or a beer. It happens in between time. And so, we opened in the beginning of what the word craft was even all about, craft bars and craft spirits, is when we opened the doors, and people did not expect that experience. So it's really nice to catch people off guard. The hard parts were, yeah, the unexpected. We are not in control. The airlines are in control. Traffic control is under control. The clock is in control. So we were challenged with hurry up and make it great, or we've got a few hours to make it great. So we were a lot of things, which the main thing was, is we were just great hospitality. You fall into a bar, like any bar, whether it's on the street or in a hotel or an airport, you fall in and you're just looking for comfort, a place to just chill out. And we did that with like an aha moment. They came to chill, but then they saw what we were doing and they're like, wait, this is not my normal saloon. And we prided ourselves on that. It was insane.
So where do you, this would just never occur to me as a field to try and to use a word that I think is vastly overused, disrupt. You know, I mean, if I were like using, I would almost, in fact, I've talked about like, you know what we should have at like Penn Station is a really nice bar. And now we have a bar that's nice for Penn Station. They're different things, but it's fine, you know? But it would never in a million years occur to me to be like, let's do a good airport bar, because the just sort of nature of that is traveling by air is very much just being shuttled from one place to another on someone else's schedule. And to me, a bar is a place where like, if I want to stay for 3 hours, I'm going to stay for 3 hours because, you know, this is, I'm paying rent on this stool. This is my space. I'm enjoying myself. I'm here for me. So where did this germ of this idea even begin? And what were kind of like, walk me through kind of the genesis and some of the first steps you had to take. Cause I'm sure there were other skeptical people you had to convince along the way besides me.
Yeah. I mean, to this day, we're still, you know, the chef and I, we hang out, you know, or bi-weekly whenever we're in town. And to this day, we're trying to figure out what were we doing? What were we thinking? Why did we think this was a great idea? But, you know, you think about business in a sense, and you think like you want to fill in the blank, any bar program. Hey, let's do this theme, this, or you want to give guests something. And we realized that we were sitting in a space that is open 24 hours, 365. We also realized that we were the busiest and largest airport in the world. Busiest airport in the world, not largest. Busiest in the world. And this is the hub. This is the home of Delta. This is the corner, you know, of the universe that, or corner of the U.S. that thrives. You can get anywhere in 2.5 hours direct. So everybody comes through Atlanta. And I did not join the team until the year before we opened. But these guys had this logic idea, let's give them something better. And you don't know you want better until you get better. And you're like, I needed that. I kind of deserved that. And that was the vision. That was basically, we didn't really have this blueprint. We wanted to remind ourselves, which we always did every day, we are a restaurant and a bar. It just happens to be an airport outside of us. We are not a restaurant bar in an airport. And that's what we wanted the guests to understand. We are normal. We were not normal, but we were normal people doing normal bar and restaurant things, but we're giving you something that you didn't expect. And the airport is a place that people are not expecting great anything except get in, get out, maybe get drunk.
Yeah, I think you said it well with, you know, you don't know you want better until you're given better. And I think that it's odd that place has done so well while you were there, obviously, and since you've been gone, given that the airports have, I think, turned the other way. They've gotten worse. Now you have those stations that you're not even inside the bar. You're at a table that's got an iPad mounted to it, and you place your order with a nameless, faceless person, and something just appears, and the quality's gone down and down, I think, in favor of convenience. But that's where you kind of made your name. How do you think that you, running ostensibly, again, an airport bar, how do you think you got that recognition and that notoriety that sort of catapulted you in what seems like a few short years into the zeitgeist and into it right in front of everybody's face? Like what took you out of One Flew South and into, I know they changed the name and I can't think of it right now, but the Dame Hall of Fame? What took you into being on the Tales of the Cocktail Board? What took you into being a guest judge on Drink Masters? Like, how did you, it seems like a catapult. I know I get asked these questions all the time as well. And it seems to me that my answer is always like, well, it happened the same two ways that it always happens. First, very slowly, then very quickly. But what was that catalyst that jumped it from slowly to quickly?
We were kicking ass at the restaurant. We were getting the awards and the recognition. I went from working a normal bar shift to becoming like a mythical creature. People didn't know this is a real thing. Is this a real person, a real thing? Like, people are adjusting their flights. People are like making a point to come through Atlanta to see not only this restaurant, but the bar. My chef was killer. He is killer. But it was the bar. We were the eye candy of the building, and my energy was pretty high because, hell, I was having a great time at work also. I mean, my guests are not just one side. They were all over the country. I was learning so many things. My menu was not seasonal. My menu was just, it was whatever I wanted. You know, if it's winter here, it's summer over there. So I wasn't able to do that. I mean, of course, using my ingredients, local worked, but my mind was insane with trying to always keep up. And I was reminded one day that I'm an airport bartender. I mean, while looking at my friends in New York and in San Francisco and in Miami, they were having these like larger than life bar programs. I thought that I wasn't, for lack of words, I thought I wasn't smart enough because people were like, you're just an airport bartender. So attending, you know, functions like Tails and whatever my USBG was offering and any kind of educational space I could be in, I wanted to be there because I wanted to be a great bartender. Like most of us when you first started, I wanted my bar to keep up with everything. And after leaving One Flew South, which I left because I didn't know where the next level was. I mean, am I going to stay a bartender forever? Which that sounds kind of cool, but I just knew that I had a bit of spark that needed to be outside of my little sandbox. People from all over the world were coming to see me, and now I want to go see them. So that's what I did. I'm like, I want to go see what you're doing and go work at bars. Initially, I wanted to consult and, you know, open other bars that were just as, you know, pivotal like mine, but that wasn't the case. Life had something different for me. And I just continued to educate myself like nonstop, read and go to everywhere, travel, this distillery, this cooperage, wherever I can go, I'm going. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, my story is basically, I mean, there wasn't a lot of people that looked like me in that space, not just women, but just women of color. And I got a pretty funky personality. So that makes for some fun. And so I just have been continuing to be invited in some really good places and learn a lot from some of the masters of their craft. And that made me just make the drinking coach even more, because the ultimate goal was for me to learn everything so I could teach it to someone else, you know, whether it was the consumer, whether it's other bartenders, and also for myself, of course. So, when you're independent and you're learning so much, you're a creative, you're an artist, and you just keep dabbing in places. You keep stepping in and stepping out and speaking up or sitting down. And that has led me to be all over the place and recognized in that space to hold that space, but also gain respect in that space.
Well, yeah, you certainly have a lot of respect. And I want to ask a little bit more sort of directly, you know, when did you make the switch from learning mind to teaching mind, and how did that go? Like, I think we've been having a lot of guests on lately who, again, like you, sort of break the mold, and you're not just strapped to a bar, you know, like I was for so many years. You're out and about and you're doing things. How did you make that flip? I think a lot of our listeners are curious about our industry at large, but they don't necessarily want to just be pigeonholed into the one job. And you have many, many jobs.
So many jobs. I still don't know what I do. Because I do it all. Lack of places that have great cocktails. I don't always drink a cocktail. I can make a hell of a cocktail. I don't always drink them. I want meat. I want a beer. I want wine. But I just saw a huge hole in great cocktails in certain spaces. A lot of those spaces were Black owned, or there was honestly, it was just a Black bartender who was just like, it just has to go like this. Like, we do this and this and this, and that's what we drink. And I was pissed. I'm like, they didn't know, some of these bartenders and some of these places who were offering a vibe didn't have any structure behind them, didn't have any like true bar culture behind them. It was always just a one note. So I really wanted to not only lead by example, but teach other bartenders of color, like, we don't want sweet. Bitter's a thing, you know. Have you ever stirred something before? Hey, you know, ice is different. I just saw a hole. I'm a problem solver, and when you see something missing, you just want to fill in the blank. And so that's where my teaching kind of sharpened in certain places where I was like, I know enough. I mean, I've ran a bar. I've had great food. I've traveled the world. Let's share it. I didn't want to be in front of everybody like, oh, that's Tiffany. She's got these awards. She worked here and there. I was like, yeah, but let me come back. Let me bring it back. That was my story. But let's get in here so you can understand and be just as excited and curious about the things that I learned. You can learn too. So my teaching mixes from bartenders to the consumer. I'm in love with the consumer. Like, so into them.
Yeah, they seem to be the most fascinated. They want to see behind the curtain, you know. They want to, yes, they want to have that look. But I'm still kind of curious though, like, how did you, like, technically make that leap from, you know, I have a job to go punch in and be behind the bar, or I have to set myself up in such a way that people will ask me to come to their bar to teach them?
The leap of faith.
Yeah.
I just saw a cliff. I didn't have a plan. I just jumped. I knew it was going to happen. I just didn't know when. I trusted myself. I trusted my gut. I trusted hospitality. Mm-hmm. And people are always saying things like, you know, let me know if you need anything, or if you're in town, come by, or if you ever have an idea, you know, run it by me. Who knows? We may partner. And I started to think about that. Like, this hospitality world, this industry says that they're here for you. I thought, okay, well, let's see if you're here for me. And I jumped, y'all. I had no plan at all. I had an idea, but I had a daydream, but there was something in my gut that was like, just keep trying, keep asking, but stay yourself. Let's not step back. Just stay yourself and put yourself in rooms where you can get that question. Can I help you in any way? Do you have any great ideas? I LLC'd my name. I LLC'd my business. I made it a thing. And then I just stayed consistent with my presence. I continued to talk about booze and history everywhere I went. And I made a point to represent who I was in those spaces every time. Somebody bit. I mean, people bit. It also just came a thing, as you know, people just expect that of you. If we saw you with brass glasses on one day, we'd be like, what are you doing? Like, what, why did you change your glasses? Like, what is it? And so if I were to come in a room trying to blend in, then I wouldn't stand out. So I just stayed with my story and stayed with my testimony that there's a missing link in culture and cocktails, there's a missing link of women in cocktails, there's a missing link in just like having a normalized conversation about what we do on and off the bar. And being approachable and authentic about it. It just wasn't enough of it. It was pretty, pretty beige in that room. It was pretty stale and I was sticking out. And so my leap was just keep sticking the fuck out. Just keep doing it. And do it for you. Maybe someone will like it.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, I want to highlight your point about the LLC. And listener, if you take anything away from this show, it's that if you're trying to do anything like on your own as a freelancer, get an LLC, get it yesterday if you can. Like, don't listen to whatever Souther and Damon and I blah, blah, blah about. Just internalize this one data point, and I promise you, your life will be so much better.
It helps. It's totally affordable. And even if you can't LLC it right then and there, just something someone told me a long time ago, go get the domain. Just get the domain. I have probably 10 domains. They're probably never work, but they're mine. It's just an idea that I had. And I'm like, oh, domain it. That way, whenever it does, whenever the water just, you know, goes over me and my flowers are like, oh, we did that. It's already there. So never think that your idea is, for one, your idea has not been done because it's only one you. There's that. But you're the name that you think of. Just do it. Just lock it down and grow towards it. I often have gotten stuck in my head about someone's already done that before. Absolutely, someone has done it before. But remember who you are. You have never done it, and you can always insert yourself into what is the same but different because of you.
I love that. And I'd like to, if you're cool with it, I'd like to dig down a little bit more on something you said earlier about the idea of like creating a more welcoming space for Black folks behind the bar and sitting at the bar drinking. Because, you know, this is one of the, I always talk about this whenever people ask me about the word mixologist. I don't like that word, because I think everyone feels comfortable at a bar that has a great bartender. Not everyone feels welcome at a bar that has a mixologist behind the bar. You know, there's just something about that word, the way that it's coded, I feel like it creates, it's this unnecessarily fancy word that creates gates and barriers. And I don't like that. I like creating spaces where everyone wants to feel welcome, but I feel like folks like Souther and I, you know, we have blind spots just based on the way we walk through the world and the faces we get to wear out in public. Exactly. And I guess my question is like, where do you begin changing that? And what can the people that look like Souther and I do to help you in that process?
You know, it's all about the angle. A few weeks ago, finished Rick Rubin's book, The Creative Act. And one of the chapters in the book talks about a point of view, basically a perspective. You did a perfect segue to that, Greg, because the word bartender versus mixologist, right? So I used to be like, don't call me a mixologist. I'm a bartender. I tend my bar. Don't make me that way. But what you just said was really nice, because like, yeah, people do feel comfortable with bartenders. They don't always feel comfortable with the mixologist. Yet, years ago in the early 1900s, being called a mixologist was like an honor. The DC Mixologist Club, which was a group of Black men who were serving constituents at this time, the DC Black Mixologist Group was like pristine, because people didn't want to go to see the bartender. I don't want to see him. He's just, meh. I want to see a mixologist. I want you to make me something to make me feel some kind of way. And so, yes, it does seem a little pompous now, because it's like, I'm not that. But you can be, and you can also be that and be as giving. You know, it's just kind of the way it's received in the point of view. If I put a bow tie on, some people connect that to this bow tie means I'm going to a formal event. Some people, like Black people, put a bow tie on and it triggers, I gotta go to work. So it's just really a point of view of how you look at said word or space. And the bartender space, because we served for so long, not just Black people, but because the service industry was covered in nothing but Black people, because that's the only job we could really get, or that's what you wanted. We honor it, but sometimes we don't want to honor it because we don't want to be the help anymore. We want to be on the other side of the bar. A lot of, well, older people that I know don't feel comfortable sitting at the bar because they're like, we're sitting at the bar? I'm like, we're sitting at the bar. Like, yeah. Absolutely. That's still a thing. This was like yesterday to some of us. It's like yesterday to our culture. So it's really just, I mean, helping the community, yes, but more so understanding the community's processing of it all is just like difficult, yet we're working on it. I'll just say that we're working on it, because my family for sure was like, you're gonna bartend? Your grandma's just stopped being a maid like 10 years ago. Are you kidding me? And I was like, but you gotta understand, like, you gotta, and then I do this and people smile and I get paid. And they're like, you you are, that's not what it is. However, my point of view, because I'm extremely optimistic on life and extremely positive on things, I thought, well, that's what it used to be. I'm going to be what it is. I have a voice now. I have an opinion now. I can be creative. I can feel strong back here. And that's something that I try to implement to everyone that's a bartender in general, because the service industry has been treated like crap, but also bartenders of color who are like, is this good for me? I don't know what to do. I'm serving this, you know, this white person. And I feel like, am I bringing it back? I'm like, you're bringing it forward. Honor that space. Like, you are the best at what you do. Bring it in. So it's just truly about being, making them feel comfortable, but also looking at their perspective of what this was and what it can be right now.
So it almost kind of sounds like maybe I've been looking at it wrong. Maybe by trying to, and I think a lot of this also is, you know, it's stuff I need to work through with my therapist. It's imposter syndrome. It's like not wanting to put myself on a pedestal, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, that's why, because mixologist does have, for better or for worse, a fancier, more learned, more kind of like involved, like this isn't just a part-time job. This is a career connotation than bartender does. So maybe I've been looking at the whole thing wrong. Maybe by creating a space where this is a craft that's appreciated, but also has a relatively, and I don't mean this as a dig, but a relatively low barrier to entry, where kind of, you know, it's not like you need a graduate degree to be a bartender, right? Mm-hmm. It almost kind of creates the, by setting the bar of how high you can rise higher versus the level at which you can start, we create a greater range for people's careers to expand into. Am I kind of hitting mm-hmm. that right?
Yep, you're hitting it. I mean, we're so humble as bartenders, right? We're just so humble because we're giving and receiving. You think it's valued if you want to be the best at what you want to be. You are a mixologist. You just don't want to walk around. Like, we know those folks that are like, I'm a mixologist. Look at me. This is what I am. I'm not a bartender anymore. And that's valid. You feel like you've worked your craft. There's layers to everything. There's levels to everything. So if you feel like you are a mixologist, then be a mixologist. Like, kill it. Knock it out. But if you are a bartender, you're a good bartender. And if someone calls you a mixologist, I personally think it's whatever you want to be called. Whatever your liquid pronoun is, rock it. I don't care. Rock your liquid pronoun and be comfortable with it. But I like you. I mean, I felt the same way years ago, and I've been interviewed a million times where, what do you want us to call you? I'm like, whatever you want to call me. Just call me my name. Just make sure my name is spelled correctly. I think it's just a point of view, like you said. And it's, I don't think you were doing the wrong thing. I just think that you were like, well, you know, I am kind of good, but I can also be this and also make people feel very comfortable. I want to be that. I mean, a great bartender makes you feel good on multiple levels, and their artistry and the way they do it is a part of it. And that is mixology. I can't believe I just talked about mixology like that. That was deeper than I wanted to be. Thanks.
Listen, we get right to the core of the issue here on Speakeasy. We always have.
A spirited award-winning podcast right here. It's that hard-hitting news people tune in for.
That's right.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin, the state of cheese, makes half of the nation's specialty cheese and wins more awards than any other state or country. Our heritage and traditions, Master Cheesemaker Program, and the American propensity for innovation all put Wisconsin on the cutting wedge of cheesemaking. With over 600 varieties of cheese to choose from and 5,500 national and international awards and counting, get ready to turn your refrigerator into a trophy case. Enjoying a Wisconsin cheese is basically like winning a gold medal in culinary achievement. Set your mind at cheese. When you bite into a wedge of Wisconsin Wonderful, you know it is made with the ultimate skill and passion possible. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
I have a road trip. I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson.
And this is an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup, the critically acclaimed award-winning syrup that helps gringo bartenders better make margaritas, Negronis,
Lou, hold up,
old
are you just
fashions?
This is how you start your podcast.
What?
It's not an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Well, of course it is. I'm just cutting costs by not paying writers to make something new. I'm just using an old script.
You pay writers?
Is that some kind of jab?
No, I'm just saying
What are you saying?
Well, look, we've got this amazing syrup that's made in an ancestral manner, cooked down from the sap of the agave, harvested the way these families would to make pulque. It's a quality product. It deserves a quality presentation.
Yeah, okay, hang on. Ancestral agave syrup is made by real families following traditional methods. Unlike the industrial Blue Weber syrup you get everywhere else, Ancestral is cooked down from agua miel harvested from Salmiana in Hidalgo, Mexico. It is the grade A Vermont maple to the sticky diner syrup you've been using for your cocktails. Ingredients matter, both in how your cocktail tastes and how you treat the earth. Ancestral is better for both. Is that good?
Sure. Or maybe confusing instead of cheesy. Look, just visit ancestralagave.com to learn more and to order your world-class agave syrup today.
And we'll call that a wrap. Catch you next ad, Greg.
Hasta pronto?
Ancestral Agave Syrup. Available online at ancestralagave.org and wherever Greg and Lou are able to coerce store owners into carrying it.
Speaking of the Spirited Awards, you took in a big one this past session at Tales of the Cocktail, and you gave a pretty impassioned speech that I think got recorded and went around quite a bit. I was there in the audience cheering you on. Can you talk about that experience and how that felt for you?
Whoa, that was a day, right? I drank a lot of mezcal before that speech. So I was very, very, very nervous. Friend to friend and to everyone that's listening, who is okay with receiving an award? You know,
nobody.
It's not normal. It's not normal. Unfortunately, it's just not normal to receive a yay after 18. I mean, and you go to college. I dropped out of college, so I don't know about getting a master's degree or a bachelor's. I just know my diploma, and it was like, yay, your parents take you out, and yay, and then go do life. You know, you're not really celebrated like that, especially when it comes to work. We're celebrated individually in love and partners and friends, but work, no. That day, and to this moment, I still kind of watched how that speech has taken me in a place. My mom and I spoke this past weekend. My mother watches that speech on YouTube once a week. So that said, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to cry. That said, that speech means a lot now because it's documented. I'm documented as a bartender. Sure. What? Documentation as a bartender? Not normal. Like, you've got a book? Yay, that's cool. We're on a podcast right now. We'll listen to this forever, right? But our stories of the service industry are just not documented. So the excitement for me being recognized with all the little boxes I check, I'm Black and gay and from the South, like all these little boxes that I checked on a characteristics point was valuable for me. But also even more valuable, take out all like the fact that I'm of color and I'm queer and blah, blah, blah. I'm independent. I don't work for anybody. Mm-hmm. Here's this girl getting up on stage, receiving recognition and respect from people I've looked up for eons as an airport bartender when they first met me. And here I am receiving an award. And I'm not a brand ambassador. I don't work for a chef. I'm not in 50's Best. I'm not top anything but top Tiffany. Fucking iconic. I was like, wow. So, and I work in privacy. I work in isolation. I work in my own little space. So being seen was I was very exposed, but also it affirmed, wow, okay, we might be doing okay. Because as I said a few sentences ago, I want to stand out with my work. I want to blend in. I want to be like, I'm doing that too. And I'm teaching too. And I want to be on this platform and on, you know, on this stage. So I want to be involved, but my strategy and the way I work is so different. So being recognized for that was worth all that mezcal.
Worth all the mezcal.
It was worth it.
It's hard work, but someone's got to do it. That's what we always say.
That's right. Well, you know, I think well-deserved. And again, we'll put up links on the post, but people should go and watch the speech. It was pretty impassioned and said with great heart and emotion. And the room was overwhelmed by you because you're a pretty overwhelming person when you get going in the best of ways. But so you took that in, but you also do a lot to give back, right? You've been on the Tales of the Cocktail Grants Committee for a bit. Are you still on that? And if so, can you talk a little bit about what work that is and what the Grants Committee does for our community at large?
Yeah, big job. We're actually in the midst of it right now, reading many, many LOIs right now for people wanting to get support for their daydreams. Tales of the Cocktail has been through many, many, many crappy situations.
Any organization that's that big and has that much scrutiny on it and has lasted as long as it's lasted is certainly going to go through some shit, I guess.
100%. I mean, I wouldn't expect it. I mean, anything less. But when they came back this time, that time, I think it was 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, they decided to really change this organization in many ways, and they can try to change it as much as they can. So throw some money out. They're getting money. Let's throw some money out. Let's give it out and be intentional about it. So it's a group of 12 of us who read through a bunch of LOIs and try to make your dreams come true. And it has to be obviously hospitality impacted. But we see everything from the new machinery for your ice machine to mental health and wellness and yoga and gardening and education. All in all, anything this industry is missing. People are wanting to fix. And so we had the joys of reading through all of these things and interviewing them in such a detailed conversation and then helping to make their business really become a real business and connect them to the right, you know, mentors and people in business to structure their beautiful ideas. Because unfortunately, but fortunately, us bartenders, some of us don't have a degree. We don't have any business skill. We just have heart and mind daydreams, and we put it in a glass and go. And when you want to take this daydream into a business structure and become a legend, you need help. And so we get a chance to implement that help and take your business to the right place, along with give you thousands of dollars, thousands of like buku money, as we say in the South, buku dollars, anything from $10,000 all the way up to $100,000.
Can you cite an example of an interesting project that you were very happy to fund and how they're doing now?
Yes, one that's dear to my heart. They're out of Atlanta, Georgia, A Sip of Paradise Garden. The founder of A Sip of Paradise Garden was a competitor for MIB, Most Imaginative Bartender with Bombay Sapphire. And they have this like part of the competition where you have to share your creative outlet. She grew up in a garden. She's a Liberian American woman. And I was like, I just want to play in the dirt. And so she used to complain about how come purveyors always go through the back door for the chef? Why don't they ever come through the front door? Like, I want to see what herbs you got. I want to see the product you have. And so, because we ended up going back in the kitchen anyway, going through the walk-in anyway. So like, come talk to us. So she really wanted to create a garden space or a space that we can grow everything we want to drink from fruit, veggies, herbs, spices, and what have you. And she did not win the competition, so she did not win the winnings that she wanted, but she was still so steadfast to do it. She started the garden here in Atlanta on her own dollars and then sent in a beautiful LOI 3 or 4 years later. And reading it, because I knew about it, but reading it and seeing the dedication and the want for this, not just to get your hands dirty, but to also offer a safe, a brave space and a place for yoga and a place to sit outside and just chill was really nice because those bartenders didn't have enough of it. And it was just heartfelt to read what she wanted to do. And it was nice to give her some coin for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty incredible. How many people sit on the board with you and how many applications would you say do you get per session, per season?
There's 12 of us on the board. Right now we have 85. applications.
That's shockingly low to me. Do you think this is because people maybe don't realize that this exists?
I think people are intimidated by the application. It's something that we talk about ourselves. I mean, again, I have an idea. Now, can you type that in all of this paperwork? Can you give us a structured LOI? Can you give us where your money would go? What is the accounting going to look like? I think some people get intimidated. In the beginning, we didn't have that many. It's fluctuated for sure. And I can't speak for why people don't want to submit. I think people get scared. I mean, they think they're not going to get it, or there's favoritism.
So I hear an opportunity here, Tiffany. Maybe it's too late for this year, but maybe next year you and I, we pitch a seminar at Tales of the Cocktail on how to apply for these things.
I would love that. And we now have help to do that. Someone can actually hold your hand and do it. So you talk and we just put it in. We can definitely, I would love to do that. And so we can give more money out. That also gives more money, but also for sponsors, it makes them want to give us more money too.
Yeah. Let's find that as well. Right. Like that's the other side of the coin. How do you talk to us just a little bit? I don't want to hear, you know, the minute by minute, but you know, the daily life of Tiffany Berryer is to, I've always said, I think the hardest job to have is looking for a job. Mm-hmm. And someone who works independently is constantly looking for a job. So talk to me a little bit and our listener a little bit about like, what's the day to day like for you? You know, if you don't have somewhere to get up and go to, maybe you become a little demotivated and you sleep in a little later each day. And then suddenly you're not getting up till 3 p.m. You know, how do you maintain a little bit of discipline and keep yourself motivated to go out and keep finding job after job after job?
Yeah. Wow. The day to day is the day to day is a blessing. I will say that. So I am honored to wake up every day and open my computer, walk into my office, which is next door to my bedroom, walk into my office down the hall.
Convenient.
And I commute after my dog walk. And open my email and see what's going on. I do take a little bit of time on social media to take a peek and see what's trending, what's going on, who's doing what, make sure we're not being blown up anywhere. I don't have to fight anybody. I don't have to burn it down. I make a point to check that first. And then I jump into my emails.
It's great, isn't it? It's like, am I going to have to go to war with someone on the internet today?
My line every morning is, am I going to have to burn it down? I'm a kind woman. I'm a sweetheart. Everybody knows it, but I will burn it. I will sabotage.
This whole place is rigged with explosive. Just try me.
I'm ready to go. Just a flick and I'm ready to burn it down. So once I find out I'm not burning it down or someone else is burning it down for me, I get right into it. So I am disciplined. I have lived my life before being independent, not so disciplined. So you get tired of being lazy. You get tired of procrastinating. You get tired of, I just got tired. So I'm a grown up, believe it or not. And I work from a certain time to a certain time. I have boundaries. I'm very good with them. I work in privacy and I work in isolation. I have to remind people of that. So I got to stay on it. I am looking for jobs, but more so, honestly, my friends, I'm looking to perfect jobs. I'm offered jobs. Hey, we want you to do this. And I'm like, actually, I'm going to do that. That sounds great, but that's just too basic. I think we should do this. And that's the part of my business and who I am that inserts a bit more culture, a bit more fun, or a bit more just not so stale cracker. But I work.
That was my nickname in high school.
I know.
No, it wasn't. I love this, though. So what you're saying is you get a job offer and you counter offer with a better job.
I do. I play tennis. My job every day is to play tennis. I am blessed and I am not boastful and I don't have an ego about the opportunities I get, but I don't take every job that I get offered. And I'm also playing tennis. I love to read a beautiful email and then say, what about this? Because that keeps me on my toes. And that keeps my brand, my brand. It keeps the event different. You invited me, so I got to be me, or else you'd invite them. And I don't know who they are, but my job is to
shape it. You shape it around yourself. There's no reason for them to ask for you and then not get you, right? If they're just asking for your name, then maybe you have to remind them of the thing that you are as well, right?
yes, I have to then remind them that my intellectual property is another thing. You just can't put my name on it. These are things you learn by being burned and, you know, seeing yourself or your workplaces. It's just, it's things you have to learn. So being independent, I'm everything. I am HR. I'm creative. I'm hiring. I'm firing. I'm invoicing. I'm everything, but I have to stay obedient to my day so that I can be all of those things. And you get a routine after a while. You make sure you don't have your martini until 12:30 versus 3:30.
Yeah. Standards.
You know,
standards.
Listen, you just don't start drinking immediately. You just stretch it out.
Oops. Yeah. I have an Underberg right when I wake up every day.
That's coffee. That's different. That's just,
that's different. That's herbal and, That's a supplement.
Yeah,
yeah.
An herbal supplement. That's my little
giddy up in the morning.
Yeah, it's wake up drinking, not power down drinking.
Well, you mentioned right there, and I want to dig into it, scratch at it a little. I don't want to dig into it because I don't love to, and I know you don't as well. I know you well enough to know that you're very positive. But you did say you do a few things to make sure you don't get burned. Have you been burned? And what would you caution people to look out for to avoid getting burned?
Burned. I've been singed. I've been definitely burned. I've been burned a lot. Where I am now and what people see is a lot of hard work. It takes, you know, as we know, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success.
That's right.
We have had this conversation many a times that I have been doing the same thing for years. You just recognize it. They just happen to be like, oh my God, your work. And I'm like, I've been at it since, you know, 96. Like, it's been a minute. So you learn, being older now, learning from those lessons is valuable, but preventing being burnt right now is where we are as adults in our businesses, and preventive maintenance is important, like legal, like having someone that can just read over contracts, having a squire somewhere in the corner, you know, they'll do it for free. Just, hey, lawyer friend, would you do me a favor? Would you read over this? And they'd be more than happy just to read through it, because a lot of these contracts come, they're just standard. I've had contracts come to me with someone else's name on it, and I'm like, oops, my bad. Yeah, because you sent this contract. I've had, you know, just really sloppy contracts come my way, which have burnt me. I've not read them. I've gotten excited about very little money, because when you're independent, you're poor, and you're like, well, this sounds like a great amount of money, because that's my light bill. So as bartenders going into shifting your business into a business, We're so used to whatever you give me because we're so kind. Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And then we put it away. But when you start to value your work more, value yourself more, or you become a bit popular because you've competed somewhere, you presented somewhere, or you are alongside of somebody who's pretty, you know, Insta famous or what have you, you just have to have things aligned so you don't get burned. Again, having a squire, I'm not rushing to say yes immediately, asking questions. And if you don't know what kind of questions to ask, then take a beat and say, can you just give me a minute? And let's think about it. You know, having things covered, your flight, your hotel, and a per diem does not pay Georgia Power. That pays for you to get there. How are you going to get paid? Who takes care of the dog? There's things like that that you have to take into consideration. And take it from me, who is super humble and nice, who doesn't know how to ask the right questions, or doesn't like to put a price dollar on who I am and what it costs. Just be real. Let's just get real, real, and put your big draws on and say, what is my rent? What is my car note? What is my habit money? What is my mani-pedi money? Mm-hmm. What is my dog money? Like, just add up a couple of things that you must have. What do you like to do? Hell, if it's just some money that you want to buy a new pair of Jordans, how much does those pair of Jordans cost? All right, buy two of them. That's how much you're going to charge them. Think about your lifestyle, and you're working to get paid. And to not get burnt, you have to make sure you know your worth. And knowing your worth is looking at your finances and asking for your finances to be paid.
Yeah, as a somewhat independent myself, you know, I have my company, but, you know, the company at large doesn't turn a lot of profit, so I don't make a ton of money from that. It's just a lot of work. But I do my online class, and I write articles, and I made hot sauce, you know, all the dumb things that I do. I try to sort of extend what you're saying beyond the sort of weekly slash monthly needs. And I just say to myself, well, if I were looking for a job, I wouldn't look for a job that paid me less than X per year. So mm-hmm. how many jobs do I need to do at the price that I think I can get my job done for to reach that goal? And is that possible yeah. within a year? Right.
I love that. Yeah. Stretch it out even more.
You know, I wouldn't accept a salaried position that didn't tell me what I was going to make for the year. So I have to decide what it is I want to make for a year. And then I have to plug in enough jobs to achieve that goal.
So amazing. That's how you look so cool.
I'd love to dig back into like something that you were saying earlier about like getting into these patterns, like, you know, like you have to hold yourself accountable to doing the work. Like when you're a freelancer, no one's going to do it but you. And I know that that's something that I personally struggle with a lot as a bartender in my 20s. And I'm sure that anyone who's listening, who's born after like 1998, I would be willing to bet that they are having the same. I know, right? People born in the 21st century can drink now. It's fucking wild. But I feel like they have to be wondering, like, okay, cool. Yeah. It's great to say that. Like, it's great to say, like, and I always used to resent this too, when people were like, well, if you want to get more done, just get up early. I'm like, oh, it's just that simple. Like I set an alarm and then I just magically lose the desire to hit snooze 18 times until it's 1 p.m. So I guess, and I think it's particularly tricky in our field too, because I think that this field is attractive to people who are smart and dedicated and creative, but lack a little bit of that innate ability that we're told we need to have to be like, you know, good, productive members of society. I hope people listening can hear the air quotes in my voice when I'm doing that, because that's just inherently difficult for us. I think we're drawn to this field where you get to be smart and creative and personable and think on your feet, but you don't have to do a lot of planning for the future. You know, when you show up, you know, the latest that you're going to leave, and all you're doing when you're at the job is just reacting, you know, you're just reacting to the circumstances, and it doesn't require you to have a Google Calendar or a budget or, you know, any of these things that we've been talking about. So I guess, where would you suggest people get started if that's a thing that they're looking to make a jump for? And I'll give my answer, and it's just very quick here. Therapy. But what is your answer?
God bless you, therapist. God, love you. You know, listen, we're all so different, right? And I think what we have experienced only comes in experience, like in knowing you're not tired until you're really tired. I think it's just a matter, yes, therapy, but knowing who you really are and what you really want. If you're lazy the 3 times out of the week, and then you're like, I've done nothing, let me do something. Okay. Let's own it. Let's own who you are. Let's get things done in those windows. I think I know knowing who you are and how you operate is going to help you then trying to keep up with how other people operate or what you got to just know how you roll. And then with what you have, do what you can with what you have. And
this is my favorite quote. Do what you can with what you have where you
that's
are.
That's all you. That's it. Like,
yes.
Okay. That's fine. Do what you, if you continue, which unfortunately we are constantly comparing ourselves to people because we have the access to do that, but do what you can, what you have, and then be done. And then when you get that little, you know, that jogging going, you're like, you know, that's really good. It's like, I'm going to use Instagram as a great example. You make so people are really social, some people aren't, but let's say you make a really cool post and everybody likes it, right? Like, man, I did that. That worked. Do I do one tomorrow? Or am I good? Like, when do I do another one? You know, if you're finding that great post, that great content worked out for you and people really loved it, you've been fed some energy. You've been fed some affirmation. So you're like, okay, maybe I'll do this once a week. Maybe I'll build on it even more. Oh, maybe next time I'll, you know, you just kind of pick up how you roll, how what excites you, and then stick with it and feed that thing, feed that excitement, feed that momentum. Trust me, when you feed your momentum makes you money, and your money will be like, man, we're doing it because we're being ourselves. We're doing what we are doing to make it work. And that doesn't have to be a 7-day schedule, 9-to-5, it can be whatever you make it to be, because that's the beauty of being independent and being all about yourself. Make yourself happy, but do what you can with what you got. Like, be easy.
Well, this has been tremendously enlightening, and I wish we had more time to talk, but we got to wrap it up. But I love this. Every time we have an episode like this where I want to keep talking, it just means that we have to have you back, for one thing, but it also means it's a riveting episode. So really glad to have had you on, Tiffany, from Atlanta. Thanks for joining us today. Where can people follow along with you so that they can see your shenanigans or your doings or what you get, all the pies you have your fingers in?
Yeah, my shenanigans are usually on Instagram. Sure. I'm not a gram girl, but that's where I post. It is a free place of marketing, and I like to share other people's stories. So The Drinking Coach on IG, also on Threads. That's a thing. My website is thedrinkingcoach.com. It's pretty standard. It's a nice landing page for anything you want to do outside of like what you're doing. But maybe I want to book you. Maybe I want to hang out. Maybe I want to do a virtual class with you. Maybe you want me to, you know, come to your house. I don't know. But that is where you can find me. I'm extremely approachable. Don't think any idea is too big or small for me. I am very intentional in my work, and I love making new friends. There's a book coming, so you'll see that later. Ooh. But either way,
breaking news.
Mm-hmm. We're writing a book.
There's a book. We're writing a book. What stage are you at in that process?
I'll know by tomorrow afternoon. I've got 3 or 4 bites on my proposal. I've had 3 proposals. Okay. I've been writing this book for a pretty long time. But yeah, I've been writing a book for a while. It's put a couple of different hats on it. Thankful for Miss Toni Tipton Martin, who dropped her recent book, Jazz Juke, Joints and Juice. I was a major collaborator to that mm-hmm. book. Not major, but you know, I helped a lot in good places there. And it did what she wanted it to do. She wanted it to be a little bump set spike for my book. And so now the pressure's on. So we're just fine tuning some things for this to be an amazing book that you'll probably get probably next year. Also, while we're leaking out stuff, I'm working on a really interesting sugar cube line.
Sugar cube?
Talk about that a little bit.
Right? Sugar cubes, right? What is that about? You know, my friends want to have syrups and hot sauce, and I love that. I love that. But there's something about the sugar cube and the person that wants it makes me very happy. It's very uniquely used. It's kind of seen in a luxury space. Some people wouldn't dare use granulated anything. And I want to capitalize on the sugar cube space. It's not to be a millionaire. It'll be in places like, you know, hotels and workspaces and on a cruise boat. It'll be on a private jet. I don't know. It's not going to be, it'll be at William and Sonoma 100%. That's where it's at. But it'll be a little box of yummies, like a Tiffany box that you open, and you'll be able to refill this with lines of sugars. There'll be cool sugars, there'll be weird sugars, there'll be really strange sugar. Who knows? It may be an unagi, like eel urchin sugar cube. It'll be like brown sugars that are all melanin. It'll be rainbow sugars for pride. It'll be just something to get these flowers out of my head and put them into something, and it's going to happen in sugar cube.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, when you said that, I thought of that scene from Crazy Stupid Love, where Ryan Gosling seduces Emma Stone, and that scene is hot. So I already think that, like, if that's where people's minds, that's where my mind went. I think when you say luxury sugar cubes, I'm on board. And I happen to know a guy who runs an agave syrup brand. So if you want, I can give you his, he's a little hard to get a hold of sometimes. He keeps weird hours, but I can give you his info if you want.
Yeah. I too keep weird hours. This is great.
It's him.
It's me.
Well, what a fantastic time talking to you, Tiffany. I can't wait to see you later this week. We're going to be in LA together, judging at LA Spirits Competition. So we will catch up in person soon. I know you're headed off soon to go down to Charleston for Charleston Food and Wine Fest. You're going to fly to LA straight from there. So you're out there keeping yourself busy, getting up and getting after it. So once again, thanks so much for joining us. That's it for this episode of The Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Please go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate to keep shows just like this one on the air, so we can keep hearing stories from people all over the world about what they're doing in the drinks and drinks industry. So anyway, thanks everybody. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. So you don't shun
the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe. It's gonna get you some.
listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaeli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.